Hello, welcome to Paradigm Shifters. We're paradigm shifting, a lot of us, meaning we're changing how we think, how we feel, how we move through the world, because what we want to do is raise our fields and frequency and really resonate out there with consciousness changes for all of the world, not just for ourselves. We have a few avatars on the planet at this point, and avatars are beings that come in here consciously. They don't have to work out karma, but they come in consciously to work out a tremendous influence of vibration, and that ripples through the fields of humanity and really helps all of us pick up speed. Because remember, I want to resonate beyond the kind of pulsing, battling fray of humanity, and so do you. We want to raise ourselves above it, rise above it, as they used to say, so that we can become contributors to a much more exalted type of humanity, a kind that can move through fields and dimensions and so on. Our guest tonight has been here recently, 6 weeks ago, actually, Ram Dass. Is a wonderful being who has worked very, very hard on his own consciousness through the years after going through a major nervous breakthrough. He's writing books for Amma. He's following Amma, or he's a part of her travel entourage. He's supporting Amma. He's reaching out and helping other people get involved. He's meditating a lot. And why? That's to radiate at a much higher level so that humanity can pick up speed. But what's it like to be close to someone like Amma, who's the hugging saint, who's the woman who hugs maybe 30,000 people in a couple of days? She's hugged, what, I don't know how many millions and millions around the world in her years of service, and she goes on these world tours. She is a shockingly amazing avatar. And our guest, Ram Dass, is going to tell you what it's like to be, I don't want to say her sidekick, I don't want to say in her entourage, but someone who is deeply dedicated to serving not only Amma herself, but the consciousness, the spiritual flow that she represents. Let's drop into the latest interview that I've done with Ram Dass on his great tour with Amma, the hugging saint. And the last time you and I talked, you said that it's as if she is the universe. And I have cogitated that a great deal. Does that make sense? Is what is kind of.
Yes, I mean, I would go even farther and say that, you know, when she attained enlightenment, she said that her experience was that she saw the entire universe floating within her like a tiny
Oh,
bubble.
wow.
So she's this infinite vast space of pure awareness in which the whole creator and creation drama, and there might even be billions of universes in that drama. All of that, all manifestation is within her like a little mirage bubble. And she is the changeless, permanent reality in which that bubble floats. And she's also the creator and the entirety of the creation. So there is nothing that is not pervaded with Amma's being. And you know, when I say that with the understanding that ultimately when we wake up, when you wake up to what you really are and what, you know, all the listeners, we share that same supreme self. So when we wake up, we discover that we are the infinite expanse of pure awareness in which billions of universes and their creator float like a little mirage,
So time and
a little
space and
bubble.
where we are and all of that loses its boundaries, does it?
Say it again, Veronica.
Time and space and all of that loses boundaries.
Well, it's the ultimate reality of what we are is beyond time and space. It's timeless. And it's untouched even by the concept of space because the ultimate reality of what we are, there's no mind there. Without a mind, it exists prior to mind. It exists prior to the thought I. It's just pure awareness. And that pure being itself, it's the essence of divinity. There's no mind there. There's only peace. It's the supreme bliss and peace. And since there's no mind, there's no time, there's no space. All of those are concepts which have no meaning if there's no mind. So it's total freedom. And it is, as you when you meditate on that and discover that that is your true being, it's such an exquisite freedom. because there's no mind there. There's no suffering. There's never been any separation or duality. This is the oneness which has never been divided and never can be divided. So it's a tremendous bliss and peace.
So how much of that do you
so
get
I try to? Take
do
myself,
you get to that fairly often, or do you get to that?
I get to that. You know, I get to that every day. That's my meditation, and I get there, you know, gradually through a contemplation, which then takes me into that state of deep stillness and silence and infinite expansiveness. I can get there every day. That's the focus of my meditation. But at the same time, it's like it's I'm still waiting for the final, for that universal reality to come and completely devour my mind so that nothing remains but that. Mm. You know, I'm doing my best to get there, but still there's the ego that's doing that. You see, that's it hasn't yet become the highest reality, hasn't yet devoured my mind.
So what is ego, Ram Dass? I know these are simplistic questions, but they are something that perplex most people that I know.
No, these are great questions. These are the fundamental questions.
All right. So
you're saying, what is ego? Well, ego, basically the root of the ego is the idea, I am a separate entity.
Right. Okay.
That's the root of the ego. And if you go even deeper, it's the thought I. That is the ultimate root of ego. And you see, if you ask, who am I? You know, your mind will come up with a story, well, I'm a person. I was born in such and such a date. I have such and such a name. But if you keep asking, wait a minute, those are just ideas in the mind. Who am I really? That takes you back to the direct experience of I, which exists sort of prior to the I am a person story. Mm. There is an I that stands alone, like the cosmic I am that I am, that Jesus spoke of.
Right.
Okay, that cosmic I am, well, that's the border of your true being. But if you even continue saying, well, who is saying I am that I am? Where is this I am coming from? What is the source of that original primal cosmic thought, I? Where did that come from? You can be pulled behind it, or you could say inside it, and discover that which exists prior even to the thought I. Mm. Now, you know, I can share something really cool with you, which is, I guess it was about 8 months ago that I was looking on the internet and I saw a post about scientists saying that the physical atom is 99.99999999% space.
Right. I love that.
So it's like, you know, this is just a single atom, mm-hmm. right? It looks like something solid, but when you look at it through an electron microscope, you go, wow, this is like a stadium full of space with these teensy weensy little particles spinning around that space claiming to be something solid.
Homeopathic.
So, yeah, and it occurred to me, oh, you know what? This is the same way the I thought is. Uh-huh. It appears to be something solid. But if you look at it under the electron microscope in meditation, you discover, oh, my God, it's filled with emptiness. And what is that emptiness? It is pure awareness. And that pure awareness is the nature of the supreme reality itself. Mm-hmm. So,
well, so, someone told me that
inside the I thought.
It's really wonderful, actually. Somebody told me that Amma has a great deal of body pain a lot, and that perhaps she takes it on from other people. Is that true, or is that just a rumor?
No, I think she's probably carrying karma from hundreds of thousands of people, and she does this by taking on various illnesses and taking on body pain, I'm mm-hmm. sure. That there's something that, I mean, somebody once said, oh, Amma, can you give me some of your pain? And she said, if I gave you even one iota of my pain, it would kill you.
Wow. And so it wouldn't kill her, you know, because she doesn't take it as her identity, as her ego. Is that it? She doesn't take it as her.
You know, she dissolves it in the universal mm-hmm. being. In the universal being, pain has no place. So she can take it on, and she suffers that pain for 1 second, and it's gone. You know, she's able. This is how she's able to take our karma. She takes the illness which was due to us, and she says, "Okay, I'll take it. I'll suffer it for 5 minutes, and it will be gone." Mm. But you know, she's carrying a huge burden. And yes, I'm sure if she were to focus on her bodily pain, she could feel, "Wow, my God!" You know. Like a dead person, like as if she'd been trampled by horses. But but she doesn't focus on that. She focuses on her true identity, and it's completely pain-free.
Mm-hmm.
It's inherently free from suffering. So she can take anything. The thing is, she can handle any burden. And you know what's funny on this U.S. tour is that, for instance, between New York City, the next stop is Toronto. If she cared about her body, she would fly.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think she would fly. Anyone else would fly. Meanwhile, what she does is she gets in her van and travels boom, 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 boom in a van which does not have good springs, apparently, and jiggles all the way and gets a ride in Toronto the next day, and by 10 a.m. she's doing another program.
So why do you suppose she chooses
and what
that?
You know, what they do is they stop halfway. Mm-hmm. And they have a satsang so that all the staff people gather around and they serve a plate of food and they get to sit near Amma and they maybe sing some bhajans. And she gets to play with everybody and everybody gets a beautiful experience. So she does this for the staff people. Instead of flying, she just drives and, you know, probably doesn't get more than half an hour of sleep. I don't know. I don't sleep well in vans. Maybe she does. I don't know. But you see, it's a superhuman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she lives to give. So there's just not a trace of selfishness in her. It's just unbelievable.
So there's not suffering at all.
That's right. She's not suffering at all. She does this willingly and joyously. Her joy is to be ever in self-sacrifice to give to everybody. And the giving is coming from an infinite source. So it's like, you know, she never empties the pitcher. She's always being refilled.
Mm. So what does she teach? Does she teach only, like, I always think of her as love. Why the hugs? The hugs are the love, aren't they?
Right. She says, my religion is love.
Ah.
So it's very simple. You know, she's teaching compassion. She's teaching the simplicity of living a life of compassion. And, you know, she's talking also about, of course, remembering God.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the creator, you know, don't just enjoy the creation. Don't get lost in the sense pleasures. Remember what you're here for. You're here to think good thoughts, do good deeds, and to become as expansive as the universe. This is a line from one of the talks that she was giving this summer. So she's here to guide us on the spiritual path. And so she, you know, she does give mantras. If you want a mantra, you can go up and ask her, and almost all the time she says yes, and people then, so she's giving away thousands of mantras to people, and the mantra is like a seed. It contains the seed of her own enlightenment.
Oh, okay.
So she whispers that in your ear, and then as you chant it with faith and devotion, the seed begins to sprout, and so it's a very powerful tool, a connection to the master's essence. That helps people evolve.
That's because she can do a transmission of much higher frequency that we can't normally.
That's right. That's exactly what it is. And then it's up to you to walk the path. It's up to you to chant the mantra, but she will be there when you chant the mantra or when you pray to her photo or just remember her name. There will be a response because she's a living master. She's literally omniscient and omnipresent. So she's living within you already. And she will respond to your every thought. And so it's a very, very powerful opportunity to gain faith because, you know, you will receive a response very quickly as you begin the path with the living master. And, you know, as you develop faith, you develop more devotion. And as you develop more devotion, your faith gets stronger.
Mm.
So it's a very, very wonderful opportunity to make a progression on the spiritual.
Does she give talks very often?
Yeah, almost every day she was giving talks. So
well, you know,
these are really quite very entertaining, full of funny stories and but also very down to earth. I mean, she does not. I tend to go for very high philosophy myself, but Amma keeps it very grounded, very simple for people.
Because she's touching people, isn't she? You know, Ram Dass, she had a really hard life, didn't she?
Amma had an extraordinary difficult childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. I mean, it's kind of worthy of the Bible or something,
mm-hmm.
in that when she was born. A sadhu was walking by, but when her mother was pregnant, a sadhu was walking by. This is a man who was considered to be a saint, but a bit quirky.
Okay.
And he said to her mother, Parashakti, the Divine Mother, is in your womb. And so there was a clue from the very beginning that something unusual was going on there. But she was born, with rather dark skin, and her family in that particular era and that location, they sort of considered her less than everybody else. And she began, singing songs to Krishna, to, the great, the divine incarnation, Lord Krishna. When she was just like 5 years old, she began composing her own songs. Mm-hmm. And she had a photographic memory and, radiated compassion so that the other children would be drawn to her, sort of, inexplicably. She was just a very magnetic personality. And but her family did not understand her, and they did not respect her. They thought she was a little crazy. She would stay up all night singing to God, and sometimes she would go into these ecstatic states and lose consciousness.
Oh, wow.
She would fall over and faint. She would even go into the toilet, which was located over the river, and go into samadhi and fall into the river.
Oh my gosh.
So, they didn't understand. They thought she was crazy. They thought she was a problem child. And she would also do things like when she would meet families in her village who were suffering, they didn't have enough food, they didn't have enough money, she would take something from her family's house, for instance, a bracelet or something that would be worth quite a lot, and just go and give it to them. And when her parents discovered that the item had been stolen, they were furious and they would beat her.
Oh, wow.
And she knew that compassion was the law, and that was the law of her being, was to give and serve. And she knew her family had enough. And when she saw the suffering, she couldn't help herself. And so she was always getting in trouble with her family. And eventually, her mother got very sick. And so when she was only after the fourth grade, she had to pull out of school and take care of all the family chores, which included taking care of cows and cutting the grass for all the animals and, cleaning the house. And when she was finished cleaning their house, they would send her off to clean Auntie's house also.
Oh, wow.
And so she was sort of became like the family servant, and they mistreated her on a regular basis. They thought she was
like
crazy.
Like Cinderella.
And eventually her devotion to Krishna reached such an extent that she began seeing Krishna in everyone and everything. Mm-hmm. Every tree was a form of Krishna. Every girl was a form of Krishna. Nothing that she saw was less than Krishna. And she discovered Krishna as her own self and merged in Krishna. She became one with Krishna. So she merged in the universal being. And this was revealed one day when in the local village, some priests were chanting the stories of Lord Krishna's childhood, and she came by this gathering where maybe 100 people were there, and she, hearing the stories, she became visibly transformed into the form of Krishna.
Oh my!
And her skin actually turned blue.
Oh wow!
Like the paintings of Krishna, and I have seen Amma blue on two different evenings. Years ago, but it was like, oh my God, she's completely blue tonight. Can you believe this? It was really, really strange. Like, what in the world has made her turn blue? But it was just like the colors of Krishna's paintings or Rama's paintings or Kali. Mm. And I don't know what that signifies. It may signify something about, oneness with the universe or the universal energy is within her. I don't know why, she would turn blue, but I've seen it, and it's a real phenomenon. So everybody there, was astonished at this event, and some people were adoring her as if, wow, Krishna has actually come in the form of this girl. And then the skeptics in the group were angry, and they said, this is not real, this is not true, why should we be adoring you? If you're real, then you must show us a miracle. They were threatened.
Wow.
If you don't show us a miracle, we'll kick you out of here.
Oh, wow.
And she said to them, Amma has not come to show miracles. If I show a miracle, it will only increase your desire, and you'll just want another one and another one. Amma has not come to fulfill desires, but to destroy them.
That's a good line.
I'm here to set you free from all those desires. I'm not here to create new desires. I'm here to set you free from the mind.
And she was still young then.
But she was about 21 at the time.
And so when...
Did I answer the correct question?
Yeah, when did she leave her...
That's a good line. I see, yes.
Did...
Yeah, she had a very, she's an amazing master. So whatever comes out of her mouth is kind of like a scripture.
And when did she leave home and become her own person?
Well,
not her own person, but you know,
it was some years. In fact, she's still, the ashram is located in the same piece of land where she was born.
Oh, really?
So in a way, she never left home. What happened was her cousin and her brother decided that she was giving the family a bad name, and her cousin tried to kill her with a knife.
Oh my gosh!
And the knife would not penetrate her flesh. He made a full gesture to stab her, and the knife would not penetrate her flesh. And in that second, the cousin felt a terrible internal wound and fell down, and they had to take him to the hospital, and Amma came to visit him, but he died 3 days later of internal
wound. Oh,
bleeding.
My.
So, but meanwhile, her brother, you know, was also persecuting her, and he was persecuting all the devotees who had started coming to see her. She already had begun giving programs, and 1,000 people would come, and they would do all these programs all day and all night, and the brother thought it was just the worst, you know, ruining his reputation. And finally, her father kicked her out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up living outdoors. She was living on the beach. And she was living on food brought to her by animals in the area. A cow would come and stand over her in such a way that she could drink the milk directly from the cow's udder. A dog would come bringing her little food parcels that he had found from somewhere. An eagle would come and drop a fish at her feet, and her mother would come out and take the fish and cook it for her.
So her mom loved her. Her mom
so
was
she was
kind
literally
to her,
supported by the universe.
And her mom was kind.
What's
her
that?
Mother was kind to her.
Her mother would come to her. There was definitely some compassion flowing from her mother. You know, she didn't want to see her daughter starve to
right.
death. But she was not allowed in the family house for months on end. And she was during this time, she was undergoing a very, very intense form of devotion to the goddess. She had had an unexpected vision of the Divine Mother of the universe. And she had been a devotee of Krishna all her life, and suddenly the Divine Mother appears before her, and she was such overstruck with such an intense love that she wanted this vision again. She wanted so much to see the goddess, so she began chanting the names of the goddess. And so she was living outdoors surviving just on what animals brought her or leaves from the tulasi tree. She would have some of these, and she would, you know, survive only on that energy. And she was chanting constantly to the Divine Mother, praying for the Divine Mother, please come to me, I want to see you again, please, you know. And eventually the Divine Mother appeared before her in a living form, dazzling like a million suns, and merged in her.
Oh my, wow.
And at this point, she entered the state of Brahman, the supreme, the absolute.
Mm. That's not the Atman.
And
is
so
it? Is that
in,
the Atman as well? I mean,
that is ultimately what the Atman
okay.
is. That's the divine self. That's what we all truly
mm-hmm.
are. And it's a state of pure awareness that's untouched by any phenomena. It's the supreme silence, the supreme peace.
Now tell me this, when you mentioned the word seeds a while back, and I'm remembering that she was obviously born with a huge enlightenment or awakened consciousness. Would you call that,
mm-hmm.
like we all have seeds in us for dark karma, if you will, or really bright potential, don't we? You know,
yes, we all have within us the seed of the Supreme Being. That's the ultimate essence of what we all are.
But we all don't leap forward with it like she does, you know.
Right. She came. She says that from the moment of her birth, she knew that only God was real.
Oh.
So, you know, she was fully awake, really, at her birth. And yet she had to go through what they call this lila of sadhana, means this play of all the drama of all of her spiritual practices, which finally culminated in her enlightenment, that in a way she was already enlightened. You know, she was a divine incarnation from birth, but she had to go through this very intense lila, means a play, to teach us about the spiritual path, to show us the way that devotion and spiritual practices leads to God realization. She showed it through her own life.
But she didn't have to decide. She didn't have to argue with herself about devotion. I think a lot of us in our society do. We like, I can't get around to meditating, or, you know, we get attracted up this line and that line. And, you know, it's a big struggle for a lot of people, but I feel like there's people like that, and probably you, that has that seed already ready to burst, right?
Well, I couldn't say the same thing about me, but definitely Amma came with that seed fully open from the beginning, right? She was this huge, embodied a huge force of devotion to God, and a huge level of compassion that was just beyond anything. I don't know that anything quite like this has ever happened in history. There have been many masters. And, of course, I'm not saying this is the first time such a thing has happened, but in Amma's case, yes, this is a fully blossomed fireball of love and devotion and faith in God and yearning for God realization that just was there from her childhood.
Mm, that's wonderful.
She did not have a living guru. Mm-hmm. So she blossomed right into God realization, you know, without the aid of a master. And so that's really unusual. Usually enlightenment happens only through the grace of an enlightened master.
But I know a lot of people. Well, I know a lot of people, Ram Dass, who are very cautious about any guru or any master or any big teacher. You've probably heard that yourself, have you?
Oh, absolutely. Well, there have been a lot of false gurus.
Exactly.
And there have been many who claim, I am an avatar, I will save you. And then it turns out that they're doing some nasty stuff with their disciples, or, you know, collecting Rolls Royces by the hundreds or whatever it might be. But, you know, it's like, by your fruits you shall know them. You see, by the way they live, what they really embody. But there's a lot of fake gurus out there. There's a lot of people claiming all kinds of levels of divinity, but then you watch their behavior and you see, oh my God, it's not so.
And her behavior is pretty exemplary, is it?
Amma's behavior is actually, reveals her divinity more than anything I could say. You just come and watch her for even just a few days, and I think it would be really hard to not come to the conclusion this is a divine being in action.
Wow. I just think just to be in her presence is really evocative for people, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's already a blessing just to see her. Just to be in the hall with her, you're going to be getting some blessing because it's a whole new level of consciousness.
So she teaches verbally. She teaches, but you said she keeps her lessons fairly able to be directed to real people or normal people, right? Not necessarily all.
Yeah, the talks that she gives, these are very much directed towards the modern level of consciousness, and you know, she's not talking about Atmanjana or anything like this. She's talking in very simple terms about developing gratitude, mm-hmm. and living in compassion, and caring for others, and keeping our mind focused on the Supreme. But she does it in a very gentle way with many enjoyable stories and lots of nice jokes thrown in. It's really quite entertaining and something that people just enjoy listening
to. Wow, and how long is your tour going on?
Well, the Toronto program ends in just probably one more day, and then she flies back to India.
Oh, my.
And I'll be back there. I'm flying back also in a couple of days, so we'll be joining her again very soon.
And do you love India?
Oh, I adore India.
A lot of people I know say that. And also, you know, it's sort of interesting, going back to the seeds. Like, so people who are involved with her don't seem to have that comparative or competitive kind of thing going on, do they? But who's the most awakened? Who's the most enlightened? Does she teach that wherever you are is where you are?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think there are different, you know, everybody, she's got a lot of devotees all around the world. And so I couldn't categorize them and say they're all completely free from ego. Wouldn't that be nice? But that's certainly not the case. We're all struggling with our ego on some level or another. And so, you know, you do see some people competing with each other, and that's not necessarily an unhealthy thing, but, you know, because it may inspire you to do better. Mm. You know, but hopefully we're competing with each other only to become more selfless and more free from any sense of competition, right? So ultimately, wouldn't it be great if we can all be completely selfless and only be embodying infinite love and compassion and have no sense of, oh, I'm better than you? Because it's like, the, you know, spiritual ego is not spiritual.
But, you know, there's something else here. We're talking about ego. We've already been talking about that a bit. But you are a remarkable writer, and you've done some wonderful books for children and on behalf of Amma's service and so on. You have to have a sense of self to do that, don't you?
Well, you know, on the one level, you know, it takes a certain level of self-confidence. Self-confidence is a good quality, mm-hmm. you know, that says, you know, I can do that. And,
but
you know,
have
I
to have the
certain,
I, don't you? You have to have the I can do that. You have to somehow embody it that way.
Yes, to some extent. But in a way, the ability to step out of the I is what enables the energy to flow. Mm-hmm. It's what enables the writing to happen gracefully and easily, you know? So there's a sense, to some extent, that God is writing through me, and I'm just sort of watching that happen. And I don't have to work that hard at it. I mean, usually it's like, I'm not somebody who writes every day. I don't sit to write as a discipline. I really don't. If I have finished a project, I will just focus on meditation, because for me that's the most important thing. And then at some point, I will receive some kind of guidance, you know, on the inner plane. I will receive some kind of thing, like I'll get some like glimmer of an idea, mm-hmm. and I will feel a confirmation from Mama inside, yes, I want you to write that book, give it a try. And then it flows out so quickly and so easily that it's like, well, I didn't do that, you know, it's, I mean, I'm sure I'm cooperating, you know, I'm cooperating with that source, but I'm not the source itself. I'm just, you know, an open
but
channel.
But you're wonderful.
I think
because,
to the extent that you get your ego out of the way.
Yeah, because when you talk about the I that way, it makes me really happy, because the I is kind of something like a machine that has to be focused, but you don't. Mm-hmm. You don't take it, or most of us in this kind of path, right? We don't take it as the goal. We just take it as a channel or a tube to keep things focused.
Right. I mean, you know, you can talk about turning the eye into a servant of God, a devotee of God, an instrument of God, and then it becomes your friend.
Huh.
You know, it's not really what you are, but you can pick up the tool of the eye to do good work, and to be, you know, to be working in cooperation with God to serve humanity. Well, then that eye is a beneficial eye. Now, ultimately, even that eye will have to go.
Really?
And nothing remains but pure awareness. But that's the ultimate kind of enlightened state. And even then, you know, the avatars must have some kind of eye going on, because if you call their name, they'll look to you. So there must be somebody in there. So there's a divinized eye that can come along with enlightenment. So that, you know, Lord Buddha had some kind of eye there. Mm-hmm. He was talking to people. So who was doing that? So, you know, even if it's a universal divinized eye, still it's, you know, that's there and it has its place. Ultimately, even that goes, and nothing but remains but the supreme peace and bliss.
Well, I really love that, but it's a bit enigmatic for us to sit and think about. You have to, like, if a person doesn't go to India or doesn't manage to get involved with one of her programs, for example, through devotion, mm-hmm. prayer, and so on, a person can align with her. Can they not? A person can gain a connection with her?
Sure, you can in this very moment, wherever you might be. You can just, if you really want to tune into Amma, you can just simply close your eyes and pray, Amma, would you like to give me a blessing? Would you like to let me know that you're here with me? Can you show me some way that you're hearing my thoughts? I don't want to come to India, but I do want to merge in God. Help me, show me the way. And you can try chanting her name. And she's, you know, I can tell you from my own experience, she will be hearing your thoughts and she will be responding. So it takes maybe a bit of subtlety of mind to begin to receive the guidance and to see the presence of how she shows up in your life. But she will be there with you. And the more that you rely on her, the more grace will be coming. You know, the masters say, if you take one step towards God, God takes 100 steps towards
you. Wow. So, and the books that you're writing, you write wonderful books. I love this one, Rising in Love, which is, it's a really, really wonderful story, just full of spiritual wisdom and some humor and some real life and some characterness and so on. It's a really wonderful, wonderful book. And I'm going to, are you guided to write on behalf of her honoring her. Do you know what I mean? Is it something that you're guided to do? And does she have her own publishing company?
Yes, I mean, I feel basically very much called to share with the world as much as I can about the spiritual path, about the divinity that we all share. Because honestly, this is not really understood yet in the West. It's very little, this knowledge of the divine self and our true identity as the Supreme Spirit. Very few people know about this. And it's the most essential piece of knowledge that exists. It's so funny that we consider ourselves a very advanced civilization, but the most essential knowledge of what we really are is to a large extent unknown in the West. So I feel this incredible calling. Oh my God, I can't believe we don't even know about this. It's the most essential. It's a key to happiness and peace. It's a key that leads us to enlightenment. So to be able to share about this and to be able to share also about Amma, this living incarnation, who knows how long she'll be with us, but while she's here, my God, people must know about it. People must come see and experience her love
And also
and receive and embrace from
be
her.
activated, Ramdas, because that's what she's doing, isn't she?
Yeah, she's here to awaken the divinity within all of us, you know, and to give as many people as possible a direct taste of the divine. And she does this with more dedication, I think, than anyone in the world. She's just totally out there. She'll hug 30,000 people a day in India
My
sometimes,
Lord,
quite
my
often.
Lord.
I mean, you know, for going 20 hours straight, and I mean, what an expression of just huge caring and compassion she shows. It's
And
amazing.
is there a lot of like yoga teaching and that sort of thing in her system, or is that like just a tangent reality as well?
No, there is a yoga system which has been developed within the ashram. It's called Amrita
Okay.
Yoga, and there's a very, very fine teacher there, and then many others who are also teaching. So that's they have a new system. It's their own system, and it's an excellent Hatha yoga teaching. It integrates devotion with Hatha yoga
And what
practices.
about the
So
cities?
it's a that's a very
What about
what's
the
that?
cities? Amazing power through yoga that some people get into. While you're talking about her, the infinite consciousness, I kind of think that the cities or that kind of power is en route. It's like learning to get powers rather than absolute universal clarity, maybe, but it is en route kind of
Right.
thing.
Well, you know, the masters, and Amma is one of them, generally recommend that we do not aim for gaining these yogic powers called siddhis.
Okay.
Because they're of the nature of the ego. That's the truth of the matter. Because it's, you know, when you gain them, if you have not attained enlightenment and you still have an ego, what could be worse than to suddenly have a magical power? Like to be able to read the minds of others. I mean, it only increases the ego. And generally speaking, this leads to the downfall of many yogis. They gain a certain level of concentration, and suddenly they realize they have a divine power. They can hear the thoughts of others. They can, you know, they can maybe they can even do amazing things like appear in another room or move one object from one place to another and pretend to be a magician, you know. And when they gain these kinds of powers, usually the dark ego comes up and claims it. And suddenly, you know, the quest for enlightenment is gone, and all you want to do is impress people and show people how great you are because you have the city, and it leads to the downfall of a lot of seekers. So the masters almost universally say, do not go after this. If you gain a city, renounce it, do not touch it. Aim for self-realization because anything with a city is involving the ego, the I that's going to rise up and use the city to impress people. This is the ego. And so it's a very dangerous thing, actually, to go after these kinds of powers. So the masters generally say, do not touch them, do not use them, renounce them, and go only for the supreme oneness, you know, for the ultimate realization where the ego will die in that realization and only the supreme being remains as your true self. Now, at that level, the cities will all be there. And Amma has all of these cities. But she doesn't play with them because it's, you know, she might use them once in a while, you know, to benefit. I mean, I have seen many miracles from Amma. And there are many stories of other people, including, you know, bringing someone back to life who had died for 2 hours. And she, you know, she brought this young girl back to life in her lap. Well, that's only a divine being with siddhis can do that kind of thing.
But one would ask, why would she bring someone back? There must be a deeper reason for that, eh?
Yeah, it can only be, I think, understood when you see the past life of that particular
That's
soul.
right.
And, you know, you understand the devotion of the parents, and who knows the past lives of those parents, because that's a very unusual event. And, you know, God knows she won't do that to everyone. She won't go to the morgue and bring everyone back
No.
to life. So that's a very rare event, and there's got to be some specific karma there that brought forth that kind of miracle.
Yeah, there's a good reason for that. Oh my goodness, I was going to ask something. Oh yeah, her a lot of her teachings are about self-referral as well as like what Ramana Maharshi and those others taught. Are they not? Does she not teach people to refer to their inner for what they're doing?
About a self-referral,
mm-hmm.
huh? Yeah, well, it's you. We are developing a certain form of intuition, and you know this comes when you offer the question completely to God and let the universe or the supreme being speak through you and show you what the truth is. You know, as you progress in meditation, the mind becomes more subtle, and the universe becomes. You begin to see that God is actually pervading all the objects and all the events that happen are not something separate from God, but that God is actually living in this creation
mm-hmm.
and can speak to you through anything. So you become, every moment becomes, you know, a teacher for you. Everything that happens becomes, oh, I see God is doing this because he's teaching me this. And so you become taught on a moment-to-moment basis by the world because the world is a form of
mm-hmm.
God. And so self-referral, we're in tuning, you know, learning to attune to the divine within ourselves, which has all the answers.
And that it's like it tells you when you're into your ego, right? It's that kind
right.
of thing, isn't it?
Yes, well, absolutely. You're developing an inner instrument, which is sensitive to you know where you're coming from. Like, you know, to what extent is my pride involved here, and to what extent am I just being an open channel for the divine? That's a very important question.
Yeah.
And, you know, it will also, this inner instrument can also help you discriminate between a true master and a false guru. You know, you come into the presence of a true master and your inner instrument, if it's properly developed, will be, you know, giving you the Geiger counter, will be reading 1,000,000.
Mm.
You know, you get, all the lights are flashing. This is the truth. And you go to another master and your Geiger counter will go, and you get a reading of -2, and you go, well, this is a fake.
Well, what you said is that, whether it's developed, and so that just is developed through, what is it, dedication, meditation, that sort of thing. That's how you develop the sensitivity and the gauge, the little meter.
Yes, you know, step by step. As your faith develops, your devotion develops, you gain some new level of experience of the divine, and then more faith comes, more devotion comes. And as this happens, the mind becomes more and more subtle, and that inner instrument becomes more accurate.
More astute.
It takes time. It takes time to develop, but and some are born with a great inner instrument, and some aren't. So it depends, you know. But that's what the path is about, is developing that attunement with the divine and gaining more and more wisdom and more recognition that all of this manifestation here is actually a form of God. And God is speaking to us through all of it and making it all happen. And it's exquisite.
And recognizing your own divinity isn't an ego thing. It's an evolutionary thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. It sounds like a fine line between egotism and the idea or the discovery that I am the divine itself. But ultimately, you know, the discovery of my own divinity is the destruction of the ego.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be, of course, you know, if you tell someone, oh, you are God, they may take the idea, I am God, and go running out and start directing traffic or who knows what, you know. So you can have people get very confused with an idea of, I am the divine, someone told me, therefore I can jump off the roof, you know, or you know, boss people around or whatever. So it is a fine line in the beginning until it's really understood, wow, that supreme reality, what I am, is a space of no mind. It's a space of perfect egolessness.
Mm.
And then, you know, then amazing things can happen.
Well, and also to wrap this up, when you're over in India, Amma has started some hospitals, which she has done a lot of service there, and also some service in other parts of the world. Do you want to give us a little bit of that information?
She's got a huge charitable organization, and it's really, it was one of the most impressive organizations in the world today. And the United Nations has given them special status, and they're doing some projects in cooperation with the United Nations. And one of their projects is one of the best hospitals in India, and they give a lot of surgeries free, including open heart surgeries, heart transplants, liver, kidney transplants. And I think they recently did a hand replacement surgery, one of the first in India.
Wow.
And it's an excellent hospital, and a lot of things are given free to the
Wow,
poor.
that's wonderful.
And they also have built 45,000 houses, which have been in different areas of India and also Sri Lanka, and these have been given to the poor and to, like, for the slum dwellers, right? Just the poorest of the poor. Would you like a new house? We'll take you here, and they get included in this new community. And the victims of the tsunami and the earthquakes and the floods that have happened in India. So these are people, like, for instance, there was a flood in North India last year, 5,000 people killed and 25,000 left homeless. And the ashram went up there immediately with their hospital, minimum. They have a mini hospital in a bus, which has by satellite connections to some of the best surgeons in the world. So they're able to do surgeries as guided by some of the specialists around the
Wow, that
world.
remote thing.
And they went up there with that bus to do surgeries. And also they went up with, I'm gonna get $8 million.
Wow.
And they went up with a team of volunteers, and they are reconstructing eight villages that were destroyed. So they're building hundreds of new houses there and bringing in their, getting fresh drinking water and sanitation and electricity. And they've done this all over India.
Wow.
They've done this in, I don't know how many locations, but like 25 different locations where they've built a whole community of new houses, and they give them to the victims of natural disasters or the
Well, and she
earthquakes.
has a lot of workers supporting the project, eh?
She does, and that's what's one of the things that's really great is that it's all done by volunteers,
Wow.
and so there's no overhead. If you give to some of the other global charities, the head of the charity makes $1 million salary, so a lot of your donation is going there. But in Amma's case, the workers are all volunteering, and so the money goes straight to the service of the poor. It's an
What
amazing
about
thing.
Africa? Does she ever go down there?
Say it again.
Africa? Does she ever go to a place like that?
Oh, she has an orphanage in Africa.
Oh.
I don't remember which country it is, but she visited there and they started an orphanage. And I think all these children are all who came from parents who had AIDS.
Oh, wonderful.
And
And she
so,
has ashrams in America. She has ashrams all around the world, or just a couple in, you said six, I think, last time we spoke about it, in America.
She has a number of ashrams in America now. The main ashram is in California, in San Ramon, which is in the Bay Area. But see, I think they have one in New Mexico, and they have one in Boston, and they have one in Washington, D.C., and they have a really beautiful new one in Chicago. So they are branching out in many new locations. And they do, in each of these locations, they will do charity and service to the community. And so they do a soup kitchen, and they do many charitable activities of service of the poor in that area.
Well, this is such
And and
inspiring information that a little hugging being can
it's amazing.
she can
It's
hug the
just
world
amazing.
with this much compassion, right?
To get the latest details of her charitable work, the website is www.embracingtheworld.org.
Embracing the world.
Embracingtheworld.org.
Okay.
And that will show you all the details of what they're doing. And there must be 50 different projects that they're doing. It's quite amazing. All kinds of medical care, housing, education, vocational training. They have a big new project of uplifting women all over India, which they're doing in conjunction with the UN.
Wonderful.
It's amazing what they do. I'm so impressed. And just, I can contribute some small thing. My books are helping somewhat. I'm very grateful. It's an amazing
I
opportunity.
think it's just wonderful, and I really appreciate you coming back on. I feel honored that we managed to grab you twice in 6 weeks.
Oh, such a pleasure, Veronica. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak. It's a joy for me to speak about Hama. It's a
And
joy.
it's a joy for me to understand more of this amazing reach that you share with her. So thank you so much. And this is Veronica.
Thank you, Veronica.
Yeah, this is Veronica Entwistle saying.
I should, before we close, can I just share one website where people can find my book?
Please.
The book is called Rising in Love. And the website is www.rising-inlove.org. Rising-inlove.org.
And it's really, I find it just delightful. There's a lot of information in it. It's also entertaining. That helps, you know.
I had really a lot of fun with that book. And it's really cool that so many people are responding with such a passion about it. Because it's, you know, I shared a lot about my early life also, the years before I met Amma, when I went actually a little bit crazy with my spiritual awakening.
Mm-hmm.
And to share that and find that people are saying, yes, I went through something like this also. It felt so good to see somebody willing to share how crazy they went and to see the whole story of how crazy you went and how close you were to suicide and how, oh, my God, you've now got a beautifully fulfilled life. That's amazing.
But you had to break through. I also have a story like that. You have to break through in order to reach that kind of unity with your own inner drive, don't you?
Well, you know, I think different people have different experiences, but often there is a certain kind of like an explosion of new level of consciousness, which turns the whole world upside down and takes everything you thought you knew and throws it away and says, none of that was true. Now here's a whole different reality. Adjust your life to it because there's no turning back, you know. And so this just can be a tremendous upheaval for a lot of people.
But also, when you read a book like yours, it helps people validate themselves when they might feel like they're out floating around in chaos, you know.
That's exactly what it is. That's the purpose of it, is to give an affirming embrace to the many young people who are having spiritual awakenings but have no knowledge to back it up and no support.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your good service. I really appreciate it. It's wonderful. I'm telling everybody, get the book Rising in Love. You will love it. And Ram Dass. Now, I always get your last name mixed up. It's Batchelder.
Batchelder.
Not that hard, is it? I don't know why I get that confused.
It's not that hard.
But this is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for joining us again. And we'll keep in touch with what's going on with Amma's work and your own as well.
Okay, thank you so much, Veronica. It's a pleasure to be here with you, and I'm happy to come back anytime.
You'll hear from me. Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.